as we start to go through this area, the other thing we ended up with is at the end, we ended up with 25 basic equations because we were measuring 25 categories, as you can see on 511. Number one, percent of the business the owner will finance, the interest rate on that, the payment period. In fact, the first nine categories, as you're going to find out, are financing categories. So once you get through the financing analysis of a business, you're going to find you've taken care of nine of the 25 you're about to go through, which is not too bad at all. Now, as you start to realize we had 25 equations, we sat down, and all the equations were very accurate. What we had was equation one said we have four apples. Equation two said we had two tangerines. Equation three said we had four grapefruit. And the problem is, by the time I had finished all 25, I didn't really have an accurate measurement, and I didn't have apples or oranges. What I had was a fruit salad, which means I really didn't have anything. So what we had to do is sit down and use a system called a thing called weighted values and relate everything back to the same thing so that we could actually add 1 to 2 to 3. In doing this, you have to realize we had to assume 0 points. We call them anchor points. But whatever you want to call them, you have to realize one thing. As you go through these and see certain values to be 0, 0 or 0.00, it doesn't mean that they are zero or they're nothings. What it means is they are zero in relation to the total system. So keep that in mind. It's zero in relation to the total system because we had to assume or start at some point and assume that to be zero. If you can start with number one right now, what you're going to find is we would like you to go through these, and as you look at number one and find out how much owner financing you have, what we'd like you to do is, in addition, as you look at 510, not only circle what the value happens to be, in this case 0.41, but also write information down as to how you arrived at this. And the reason we have this comment area or the information area, we will write down how we arrived at this. Many times when you're evaluating a business to find out how much it's worth, in fact every time, you're going to find a lot of these values will change as you go into deeper analysis or people change their mind on different things in the transaction. You're going to find that the value of the business will change. So what you have to do is please write down how you arrived at it and do it in pencil. And that way, when you come back later and want to make a change, you can erase it and put in the new information as to how you arrived at it. If you don't write the information on this sheet and you're working on 10 or 15 businesses at one time, you may have to go through a stack of papers 2 or 3 feet high to try to figure out how you arrived at that one item of price. So please, under comment, do write down how you arrived at it. Now, what I'd like you to do now, to see how good you are at balancing things, I'd like you to take page 5.4 and 5.6 and move them up in front of you. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to pull out 5.10 out of your book. 5.10 out of your book. Now, there's nothing wrong with going back to refer to 5.11 if you like. In fact, if you like it this time, maybe it'd be also good to pull out 5.11. Please then close your book. If you don't do that, you're going to have so many pages all over the floor, you're not going to be able to get back to where we started. Now, in front of you now, you should have page 5.4, 5.6, 5.10, and 5.11. What I'd like you to do now in your book, after you've closed the rings, I'd like you to flip the page and look at 5.15. So in front of you, you're looking at five different sheets of paper as a guide. Now, what we're going to be doing now is we're going to be going through the different weighted values to arrive at the price of what? Of the intangibles, the goodwill, the blue sky. And what you're going to have to do now is get used to these sheets to dig out, find out how to dig out the information. In the future, you're going to be digging it out by talking to the seller or going through certain documents. Now, first of all, the financing categories. We have the first nine categories of the 25 are financing categories. And of the nine categories that are financing, we have three subcategories because there's only three basic financing categories that you're going to run into. Now, in this program, as you get to the section on financing, you'll find later in the program that we have broken financing into three sections, but we also have a supplemental section. But let's talk about the three main ones right now. Number one, the first category is owner financing. In other words, the owner is providing financing, buyer puts down so much when they buy it, and the owner finances a certain amount of that company. The next type of financing is supplier and vendor. And again, these are people that you are supplying goods to or services or people are supplying to you. These are associates of yours when you're in business, suppliers and vendors, and they provide financing. The third category is the one called institutional financing. In other words, you're going to an institution. You may be going to a bank, a savings and loan, a federal government, to the Small Business Administration. This is institutional financing. Okay, and those are the first nine. Let's start now and start going through this. And again, as you go through the first nine, you're going to start to get a feeling as to how this works. And you'll find by the time you get to maybe 10, 11, you're going to start to get a feel for what we're really doing here. So be patient with yourself. Number one, what is the percent of the total business that the owner will finance? Because what we're looking for is 100% financing, okay, or as much as we can get. So the first thing is, how much will the owner finance? And you're going to find as you go around the country, this has been a standard for the last few years, most owners want 25% down on a business that makes, say, between $50,000 and $500,000, and most owners will then finance the other 75%. With the other 75%, they'll finance it, and they'll let you pay off that 75% out of the business. Okay. So what are we concentrating on now? We're trying to get that 75% financing down pat. And keep in mind one thing. Why would it financing give a business value? Well, think about it. Which would you rather buy? A business where the owner wants all cash and you have to go out to a bank and borrow at very high rates, which reduces your cash flow, or an owner where an owner is going to provide you with much better financing, longer-term financing, and also in most cases at a lower interest rate? What does that do? It improves your cash flow. It also, you're going to find, will do what? It'll increase the value of your business. So financing is a big part of the value of a business. And you should consider that first, because that's the key to success, whether you're buying it or selling it. And for those of you analyzing this from a selling standpoint, the more financing you provide, the more money you can get for your business. You're also going to find the better terms that a buyer gets in buying a business, the lower the failure rate. Because if the seller puts a noose on the neck of the buyer when they buy it and make the financing so tight that they have a noose that's very tight, no light at the end of the tunnel, when something happens, those buyers will walk. They'll walk away. If you give a buyer breathing room, and even though the noose does tighten once in a while, the average buyer will not walk away. In most cases, we find that the reason the transaction doesn't work and the buyer fails is the buyer didn't have any breathing room. So give the buyer some breathing room in the transaction. Structure it so it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, move on to something else. Now, first of all, we're going to be talking about the owner financing. First category, what is a percent of the total business the owner will finance? And what I'd like you to do now is turn to page, or look at page 5-6, which should be right in front of you. And if you come down on the right-hand side of the sheet, about 8 inches, it says owner. And it says sell, yes. And it says terms. And it says 25% down, 10 years, 10%. You say, my gosh, what does that mean? Well, this is shorthand that's used in the industry, and you're going to have to learn in this program. And you should learn it by the time you finish these tapes. First of all, what we're saying is the owner wants 25% down. That's a standard. You're going to find then that it also said that the owner will finance for 10 years at 10% interest. That's the shorthand, okay? 25% down, 10%, or 10 years, 10%. Where do you get the rest of the money? We'll get into that later. Now, the percent of the total business the owner will finance, and if you come down the sheet under percentage, it says 75, 61 to 80. So 75% financing gives the weighted value of how much? 0.41. And what you're going to find when we finish, we have given you the answers mathematically. When you finish, all you're going to have to do is add these 25 together, multiply by a thing called the adjusted net profit, and you have the what? The value of the intangibles. You have the value of the goodwill. You didn't have to throw a dart at the wall. You didn't have to do anything magic. You didn't have to guess. You're going to know mathematically what the value of what? The goodwill is, the value of the cash flow. Now, 0.41. So on line 1 on 5-10, you would circle 0.41 and write down the information. Owner financing, 75%, 10 years, 10%. That we can remember later. Now, the next thing is, number 2, what is the interest rate in the owner financing? Now, this is difficult. What's the interest rate? The owner already told you, 10%. Now, 10%, which comes to 0.00. It's one of our anchor points. It doesn't mean it's zero. It means it's zero in relation to the total system. So, on line 2, you circle 0.00. And again, it's the interest rate of what? 10%. A lot of you that have not been involved in business or involved in larger transactions probably do not realize, and we're going to cover this in detail later, that in financing, a 10% interest rate on owner financing is very high. In most years, you're going to find that the interest rate on owner financing runs 7 or 8%, and you're going to find even in the last few years when we had very high interest rates and the prime was up very high, most owners were financing at 9 or 10%. Now, don't come back to me and start talking to me about the imputed interest rate that IRS has in here. I'm trying to tell you what the real world is of what's happening out there. And if you're talking to a seller, and a seller tells you that the going rate is 14% or 15%, whatever it happens to be, ask them a question. Is that the going rate for 20 years on the financing, or 10 years? What has the interest rate been over the last 10, 15, or 20 years? And most sellers will laugh and say, huh, it's been 6, 7, 8. So even when you're paying 7 or 8% as a buyer, that's not a bad interest rate over a long period of time, even though the banks are going to make you think otherwise. The next thing is the payment period owner financing, and you're going to see the owner tells us he will finance for 10 years, which is not a bad start. You're going to find many owners are going to start out and they want all cash. So we've got them up to 10 years. And again, we don't give you big stars at 10 years also, because most of the people that go through our program, 80-some percent of them, get 15 or 20-year financing. 12 to 14% of our graduates of our seminars get 25 or 30-year financing. So I just want to tell you, from the Hamill standpoint, if you only get 10-year financing, you don't even get a star. It's not bad, but it's only a beginning. But it's not a bad start, because remember, we're analyzing this business, and it's basically, we first talk to the seller. So what we have is 10-year financing. It's a 0.35, so we circle 0.35, and again, put down the appropriate information. Now, suppose in a little while the owner says to you, hey, I feel very good about you, buyer, and instead of financing for 10 years, I'm going to finance 20, give you 20 years. Say, hey, great. How do we change this? Very simple. If 10 years was 0.35 and you look at the sheet, what is the value if the owner gives 20 years? 0.63. Well, why would a business be worth that much more because the owner gives you 20-year financing? Well, I just want to tell you one basic thing. You're going to find if you analyze the payments and the cash flow you have for 10 years with 10-year financing, you're going to have this much, again, a small amount of cash flow left. When you start to get the seller of a business up to the point where they will finance for 20 years, you're going to find that the cash flow that you have left over becomes almost obscene. It's really fantastic. It also makes it a lot easier to make it. And what we have built into you in equation three is two things. Number one, what would the additional value of the business be if we got 20-year financing versus 10? And the second part of it is, what would the lowering of the failure rate be? Because wouldn't you like to know mathematically what the failure rate is? And what we've done is, you don't need to even think about it, we've built it in for you mathematically. And you're going to find the more breathing room that the person going in or the better financing that you have, you're going to find that the lower the failure rate. So we've built in the two things for you mathematically. You're going to find after you get over 20 years, it's just sort of a psychological thing. You don't pick up that much getting over 20-year financing. But so far, what have we gotten in the first three sections? We've analyzed and gotten values for that portion of the financing that has to do with owner financing. And you're going to find the owner will finance 75% in most cases. Now, we'll get into the financing later on other problems or aspects. Now, once you've looked at category one through a three, you've analyzed one of the main areas when you're buying or selling a company. As we start to look at four, five, and six, and if you just turn the page, you're going to find we're getting into category two, the second category, which has to do with supplier and vendor financing. Supplier and vendor financing. Now, when you have supplier and vendor financing, what we basically have is we have the same type thing. We're looking at the amount that they'll finance, what is the interest rate, and what is the payment period. Now, remember, these are people that are supplying us with goods or services. And keep in mind, in almost all cases, we are their customers. As we get into financing later, you're going to find that we're talking about borrowing cash from these people. This is not getting extended credit. This is not getting all the other benefits you get from your fellow business owners. This is cash. Cash we're going to be using to buy this business or for working capital, but basically to buy the business. Now, in this case right here, I want you to realize this manufacturing company happens to be a real company. In fact, in all of our programs, there's only one example we've ever used in all the programs we've ever taught that were not businesses we owned or have owned. And if you'll recall, the only one that we have in this program is the one that we had in section on the profit and loss. And the reason we don't use our own, that business, as you'll recall, was the one that was fraudulent. And we don't like to use companies of ours that are violating the tax laws. That would not be very smart. Okay, now, the percent of the total business the supplier will finance, you're going to find in this case, we're able to get the rest of the financing from the supplier and vendor. Now, don't start to muddle your mind right now whether you can get this financing or not. We'll talk about that and hopefully convince you and show you how to do this later in the program. But right now, I just want you to concentrate on the fact that this happens to be a real example, and I can reassure you that we got 25%. And we borrowed from the suppliers and vendors, okay? We got 75% of the financing from the owner. We borrowed the other 25% from the suppliers and vendors. Now, supposing I had to use my own money. Supposing I went through 1, 2, and 3, got owner financing, and on the other 25% I had to use my own. Well, if you do that, you have it made, because on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, it's not applicable. You just take 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, 9, and don't fill those out. Why? Because the only financing available is what? 1, 2, and 3. The same thing happens if you've solved your financing problems in six of them, of the nine. You leave the other three blank. Now, this example here, we've gotten all the rest of the financing from our suppliers and vendors. And it comes to 25%. So what is the weighted value here? 0.43, which you enter on your sheet. Number five, the interest rate on supplier financing. The thing I want you to realize, the average interest rate in the United States when a supplier lends you money is zero. Now, when I tell you zero, you have to realize there's no free lunch, but you have to realize that although they may be lending you money today, in the future, if you're going to be the owner of the business, somebody's going to come to you and borrow money. And we do a lot of lending back and forth, whether it's extended credit, which means letting somebody pay 30, 60, 90 days out, or lending them cash. It's done quite often. It's the largest area of financing in the business community. That's where the money really comes from. And the thing you have to realize is if we started charging each other interest in business, we'd put each other out of business. We're not bankers. We're just trying to keep each of us alive. And again, I want to keep myself alive in business. And if you're working with me and supplying with goods or I'm supplying you, I want to keep you alive too. Why? I have an ulterior motive. You keep me going, either no matter which side you're working on. And if you need money and I have it, I'm probably going to provide it. Now, on the percent of total business, we talked about the 25%. As we get to the interest rate, in this example here, it happened to be zero, a 0.21. Now, the thing you have to realize is a little star or asterisk next to 0% interest, or the 0.21. And if you look at the footnote, it says, if 0% is used, do not use Category 6, the payment period. Now, why would we have that here? Because the standard in the United States is, and has been, we do not pay interest on this. I want you to be able to go back to this tape program over and over again, and every time you look at number five, Hamill is telling you, don't embarrass me by paying interest. You hear what I'm saying? Now, I want you to understand, though, if you go out to the community and you find that you run into a supplier, it's your only source, and the person wants 8 or 9% interest, and the bank is charging 15, pay it. That's fine. But I want you to realize that the standard is zero. But don't blow the whole deal. I mean, just don't blow it because they're going to charge you interest. Try to talk them out of it. Try to get somebody else to do it. But if push comes to shove and it's a lot less expensive than anything else, do it. Quit thinking about it. So what we have here, the weighted value of 0.21. And as I said, anytime you have zero interest, what do we do with number six? We eliminate it, or we don't use it, not eliminate it. And you'll see that number six, we've just basically crossed through that number. Now, in this example, we've already gotten the financing that we need. So if you're looking at 7, 8, 9, you're going to find we're not going to be using it. But let's talk about it anyway. Because if supposing you go through this and you find you do need institutional financing, SBA, bank, whatever, you are going to use 7, 8, and 9. And they're the same as the other six categories we just went through. The first one is a percent of the institutional finance. Nice and simple. Now, the next one, number 8, is not going to be that simple. And although it's not in this example, let me talk to you about it, because it's the interest rate on institutional financing. Now, what we're saying here is on the first 40% of business value, if you're borrowing from the institution and it represents 40% of the business value, these are what the numbers are. Now, when you start to get up to prime plus 3 and prime plus 5, I, Hamill, your friend, are telling you every time, if you get involved in prime plus 3 and prime plus 5 loans, I am predicting mathematically, or we are, that you are going to go out of business. Now, on up to 40%, you'll see that the weighted value is minus 0.50 or minus 1.0. I want you to realize that mathematically within this, we're pricing our value of business. I also want to tell you that if any one category, any one value comes up to minus 0.50 or greater on the minus side, we are telling you and recommending mathematically, do not buy that business unless you can correct that problem. Okay? Because even though you may have a price on it, what you have here mathematically, we're telling you mathematically, is you have a flaw in the business. And this flaw is going to sink you. Again, it could be minus 0.48, anything in the range of minus 0.5. And anything above that, the further above it goes, the more we're telling you you're going to fail. So you get a prime plus 3 and prime plus 5, and I can relate all sorts of horror stories that happened in the 80s when the prime went up over 20%. And that means that you end up paying 25, 26, 28% interest. Do you realize on these also, they want your house security? They want to cross-collateralize, which means they want your house and every other item you own? That means they take everything and use it as security. You know what these loans are for? These loans are for dummies. These are loans that banks or lending institutions make even though the thing doesn't make sense. In other words, you want to buy a business. The business doesn't make sense. If you want to borrow $100,000 and put up $1 million as security, the bank will say, fine. They don't give a darn. Why? Because when you fail, they end up making even more profit. So these are dummy loans. So if you want to get a dummy loan, get it. But I just want to tell you something. I am predicting, not only based on the mathematics, but my personal experience, that you're going to fail. Because what we're saying is these are normally five-year loans. And in a five-year period, the way the country's running today, at least once for a short or a long period of time, the prime will go up over 20. And when it does, your ship will sink. Now, that's only part of the bad news. If you go down to Section B, when you're going out and getting this institutional financing of prime plus 3 and prime plus 5 on 41% or more of the business, how do you like those numbers? Minus 3.7, minus 3.2. In fact, with just these two numbers on every business, almost any business you run into, it'll wipe out all the other values that you've come up with. Has a great management team, this wipes it all out. And you'll end up with a zero or a negative number. What does that mean? You can't do it. You shouldn't do it. I want to tell you something. I won't say that 1,000% of the time you're going to fail, but when you get up in this level here, you are up in the major failure area. In other words, your chance of making it is a little remote and almost none. I can almost say on this one, it is none. You're not going to make it. And those of you that don't listen, again, I'm not doing this from a textbook. I'm doing this from experience. I've been in this business over 30 years. And I've seen people like you do it wrong. I've done it wrong myself with tears in my eyes. Please. No prime plus 3, no prime plus 5. Figure out some way to do it. It's not worth failing. And again, if you don't believe it, go down to bankruptcy court any weekend, or not weekend, during the week, and you'll see people that didn't listen in these areas. You can't make it. The numbers don't work. The last area, payment period, again, is the same as you have in the other categories. Now, as we start to go to the next one, which is number 10 on page 518, you're going to start now to get a feel for how this works because this is a little more general in the financing. And what you're going to find as you start to go through the rest of the categories, you're going to find the things that actually make up the value of the business. You're also going to find the things that make a business easier to run, difficult to run, to make you fail, or live that good life where you're going to live on that big boat down in the South Pacific. And it's going to start to boil down to this. Now, as we start to get into number 10, you're going to find of the next categories, three of these categories, 10 and a couple of others after that, are actually going to be business, or excuse me, categories of things that measure value of the business that are actually outside influences. Things that are going to be outside influences that are going to determine how much money you're going to make, how much profit, how much sales, and how easy your life's going to be. And these are good conditions also. Now, type of market. We talk about the type of market. If you're looking at 511 also, it says type of market where? In the industry. Type of market in the industry. And what we're looking for here is we're looking for something pretty good. Now, if you look at your sheet to find out what your company has, you're going to find the type of market within the industry. And it says, type of industry manufacturing. And it says above that, on page 5-6, the left side of the sheet, about 2 inches up from the bottom, under industry, it says level market within the industry. So what we have here is a flat level market. And again, if you want to think of yourself as sort of floating down a business stream, you're in your little business boat, and you're floating down this stream. If you have a flat level market, you're going to find that the stream or the market within the industry is going to have not too much of an influence. You and your management can work a normal number of hours, and your profit and sales will stay sort of flat and level based on that one area. Now, looking at number 10, you're also going to find that we have an expanding growing market. If you happen to have an expanding growing market, you're going to find that just by going down that nice business stream with your management and working very few hours, you're going to find the industry itself, the market of the industry is going to do what? It's going to drag you up with it. And you're going to find you and your average management is actually going to will be able to sit there, work a normal number of hours, and the industry itself will do what? Drag up your sales and drag up your profit. That's a nice business to be in. The worst category is a thing called declining market within the industry. And what you're going to find, it has a minus number, minus 0.29. And the reason it does is the fact that in a business like that, when you're floating down that business stream, you're going to find that you have to work 70, 80 hours a week to do what? To overcome the declining market. And what you're going to find is those are the businesses that cause you a lot of problems. Why? Because although you're running like crazy, you're running up a board with grease on it. And what you're going to do is the faster you run, the more you slide backwards. So if you find a declining market within the industry, I'd say beware Okay, in addition to pricing it, beware of the business you're in. The age of the industry. The next thing we have here is the age of the industry, because basically new industries are get-rich-quick areas and very risky. And again, no matter where you go, people are trying to get rich quick. Nobody wants to take their time. As you know, in our programs, our motto is, and the way we operate is, become mildly wealthy slowly. As we try to convince all of you over and over again, is you can make more money in business honestly than you can dishonestly. And also, if you take your time and dot the I's and cross the T's, you don't have to experience failure. What will happen is you'll succeed every time. Now, we start to think about these industries. What kind of industry do we have here? Number one, we have an industry. It's manufacturing. And again, what's the age of the industry? It's over 20 years. And as you look at this, the age of the industry, it's an old industry, established over 5. So this industry qualifies as a plus 0.27, which I think is really fantastic. And what happens is the industry has settled down. Although we find in the United States that the failure rate in startup business is very high, and maybe the overall chance of making it over a 4 or 5 year period is only 1 in 10, the thing you have to realize, when you also additionally get into a new industry, you're going to find, number one, your average chance of making it is 1 in 10, and a lot of new industries, your chance of making it in that industry is 1 in 400 or 1 in 500. So if you take the 1 in 10 and multiply by the 1 in 500, your chance of making it, well, you have more chance of flying to the moon this afternoon. So what I'm saying is beware of the new industries. Let them settle down. These Horatio Alger stories about the first one in the area, the one that's going to get rich. No, just like franchising. What I want you to do is be the first one to go into that business after somebody else does it successfully. Let the other people screw up. And after they've screwed up and gone down the tubes, then you go in and do it. Now, the new industries like to... We're talking about still in the formative stage in the first 2 years. Again, just don't hold it to 2 years, because you have industries that still haven't made it. Solar has been around longer than 2 years. And we still have a high failure rate. It's still in the new area. Why? The state of the art of the equipment is really not very good, and it's still in the new area. So you have to look at this and use your common sense. In other words, forget about the 2 years. It's still new, because some things are going to be new 10 years from now. Another industry that's been around a while, or a business, video discs. If you don't believe video discs have been a problem, why don't you contact RCA? And you're going to find they've had trouble. The video disc business really hasn't done very well. Again, videotapes taking off like crazy, but video discs, you have a basic problem. Number one, you don't have a lot of inventory. Number two, you have incompatible systems. And you also have a company that has a tape they're working on right now, in fact they have out in the market, that actually is erasable. Erasable disc. So what you're going to find is the state of the art, stay away from those. So what I want you to do is go out and get involved in businesses that are middle of the road, that are doing very well now. Look at those nice businesses that are new, startup. Buy one now, and then 4 or 5 years from now, go out and buy the ones that have settled down. How do you find out? Right now, there'll be 500 in your area in that business. Get a list of all of them. 5 years from now, call of them. All of them will have disconnected phones except 3 or 4. When they answer and say, hi there, this is ABC Solar, say, hi, would you like to sell? And what you'll find is a certain percentage of them, 20-25% of them, want to sell. And what you're doing then is you're buying into something after the risk is gone. I keep telling you, if you want to do something risky, go skydiving, buy a racing car. But in business, stay away from the risky areas. Always protect your cash flow. Makes life a lot better. So what do we have here? We have an old industry established over 5 years. The next thing we have, and we're going to discuss number 12, is the competition in the industry. Because what you're going to find is, although a lot of you want to think of you as macho, or what would be called machoous, a woman, I don't have any idea, the competition. And what we're trying to do is get you involved in businesses that don't have the competition. Now, what I'd like you to do is look at the sheet you have here and look for the area called competition. And under industry, it says competition in the industry, it says none. Now, as you go through this, I'm now going to start to show you little things that are different from what we have on the form here. And what happens is, I wrote down what the owner told me in the beginning. The owner of the manufacturing company said, I have no competition. Nothing. None. So what you do is race back and say, no competition. They are using the wrong terminology. And let me give you the basic thing you're going to run into that's going to give you a little difficulty. And that is the psychology or makeup of different business owners. When you get involved in a manufacturing company, you're going to find the man or woman that owns that company is going to be sort of laid back compared to the other extreme, which is, say, retail. And when you go into work with the people that are in manufacturing, they're going to say, hey, no competition. That doesn't mean they have no competition. It means that they are laid-back people, and competition is a normal part of the business. The only time that you truly have no competition from a measurement standpoint, which is what we have in number 12, is when they have a lock on the market, a definite lock. So don't be fooled by the terminology they're using, especially with manufacturing. And what you're going to find in this example, although they say no, you're going to find it's really average competition. It's your average business, which really doesn't have much competition, but it's not doesn't have a lock on the market. It's a plus 0.09. I also want you to realize, going to the other extreme, we have a thing called highly competitive, very cutthroat, clothing manufacturing, a minus 0.93, and you're going to say, but I want to go into that. Well, unless you've been in clothing manufacturing and have been successful, I want to tell you something, you shouldn't consider it. And even if you've been in it before, I'd suggest you try something else, because you can make more money, you can do it consistently, and have a nicer life. Now, when you get involved in the area of highly competitive, you're going to say, this has to be retail clothing. No, it doesn't. But when you do go out to talk to an owner of a retail clothing business, and I'm only comparing types of people, you're going to find that compared to the average person who owns a manufacturing company, they are not laid back. The average retail person, especially in clothing, is hyper. And you're going to find that they're going to say, oh, gosh, I have lots and lots of competition. Oh, my gosh, it's driving me nuts. When you go out and check, you're going to find they're in the same position. They have average competition. Now, the reason a lot of you are fooled is the fact that you'll go to a regional mall and you'll see 28 women's clothing stores. The owner will say he has so much competition it's driving him nuts, and you'll believe him. What you don't realize is the average mall has 26 women's clothing stores. They may have 28 when they start, but after a year or two, the 2 week ones will fall out and you have 26. And that becomes what? Average competition. You say, well, there's a lot of them. Let me tell you, the malls had the same thing we used to have years ago in the downtown areas. Women like to go to clothing stores, 25 or 26 of them, and not spend any money. The same thing with shoe stores. Now, when we talk about medium competition, we're also talking about something you come up with, which is restaurants. You all think that restaurants are a lot of competition. It really isn't so. And you're going to find that the only time you have above average competition in the restaurant business is when they've put too many in the area. And the reason you have this quite often in the restaurant area, where there's been an overbuilding, is everybody thinks they can run a restaurant. And that's not true. One last thing I want to mention on this highly competitive, when I'm talking about very cutthroat, when I'm talking about clothing manufacturing, I'm talking about a clothing manufacturing business that changes its styles four times a year, that has to go from design to financing to manufacture to shipping to selling in a three-month period. How would you like to be in an automobile assembly plant and have to change your model design every four times a year and also finance it four times a year? And that's what the difficulty is that we have right here. And what you have to realize is, my example always is, if you're in the clothing business, fine. But if you're not in the clothing business, the thing I want you to realize is you don't want to have a business next to the clothing business. Why? They probably have one of the highest burn rates in the country. If it's a good year, fine. If it's a bad year, you're going to find they have a lot of fires. In fact, my rule is, unless we have a 20-hour firewall, I don't want to be next to one. Again, for those of you who want to live in Beverly Hills and live in a big mansion, you'll be able to do it in that type of business. But also, you're going to find that's 1 year. The next year, you're going to be pumping gas like a Hollywood rock star in downtown Hollywood. So what I'm trying to tell you is, why not stay in the areas where you have steady growth? Go after the ones that you don't have that competition. Why make life tougher than it already is? Go after average competition. One of the other areas, we've talked already about three basic areas that are outside the business that influence the ability to make a profit, the ease of making a profit in sales. One of them had to do with number 10, which is the market in the industry. The next one is the local economy. And what we have here, local economy, is another outside influence. And as you're floating down your business stream, you have to realize that what we're looking for is the best, which would be a dynamic local economy. If you happen to look at your sheet on, again, 5-6, on the left side up about 3 inches, this is economy. Again, it's going to be owner feeling in the beginning. Later, as you start to check it out, you're going to be able to find out on your own, because let's face it, a lot of times owners are going to embellish. You can call it lying. What they're doing is basically is they're doing some creative selling. And as you start to check it out, you may find it's not that accurate. So in the economy, you're going to find local, it's strong, very good. So what we have here is a dynamic local economy, and as you and your average manager are floating down this business stream, you're going to find that the local economy being very strong and dynamic is going to do what? It's going to have a tendency, without you working a lot of hours and killing yourself and putting out a lot of effort, is going to pick up your sales, pick up the profit, and increase it. Now, on the other hand, if you happen to have a stable local economy, you're going to find that things have leveled off, and we have a value of 0.00, but the main thing is you're going to work a normal number of hours, and the profit and sales really aren't going to do much. You have to be wary of that. When the inflation rate's very low, it's not a problem, but you're going to find as the inflation rate gets higher again, it gets up to 5, 10% again, you're going to have to realize that this business, if you have inflation and you have a stable local economy, you may have to work more hours to do what? Not to overcome the economy, but to overcome the effects of inflation. The worst condition will be declining local economy, and that's the economy is turning down, has been for some time, like a downtown area. And what happens is you and your average manager floating down its income stream are going to find that the business is going to slide unless you work a lot of hours. So you work 50 or 60 hours and you're going to find you're basically level. You find if you work 80 or 90 hours, you may be able to even increase it. But the thing is, you're going to find it makes it very difficult. Now, the thing I want you to realize is be careful in this area. If you're talking about the economy and you're manufacturing in southern Florida and you're selling to northern Maine or northern Washington, I want you to realize you have to analyze which market, the market you're selling to, because that's the economy no matter where you happen to be located. I also want you to realize, because a lot of you make mistakes in this area, that if you're in a city or in a county, and say the county has a reputation like Orange County in California for fantastic growth, but you may be in a retail business in a downtown decaying area, you have to measure the area that you're in or the area you're serving. In other words, use your common sense.
This concludes Side 1. To continue, please turn the cassette over.